Hey, what's up? This is Brendan from the Lawrence Arms, and you are listening to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast.
It sucks, I still think Mabel, she's the bomb.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Mabel Syndrome Podcast. This is season 2, episode 26, and this is Kristen, one of the founders of Mabel Syndrome, and my guest for tonight's podcast is Johnny Hamlin of the band Lights Over Bridgeport and numerous other projects. Hey Johnny.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be here. I don't feel like I'm that interesting of a person to be a guest on a podcast, but I'm here and I'm excited and I'm embracing it.
Of course you are. You have all sorts of cool stuff going on, but also you're just a friend and a supporter of Mabel Syndrome, so of course we'll have you on.
I'm so stoked.
I'll try not to, and you're a friend, so I know a lot of personal stuff. I'm going to try to not, like, I'll throw you softballs, not, like, you know, too much dirt.
Okay, that's fair.
But I mean, we got to make it interesting still for people.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it is like, I'm a supporter of Mabel Syndrome big time, but we're buds. We've been buds for a while. So it's like, this is more like a conversation between friends almost is what it feels like.
Yeah, totally. Awesome. What'd you do this weekend?
Probably shouldn't crush ice cubes on the podcast, right?
Right.
Sorry. What did I do this weekend? I deadlifted. I went to the White Sox game. I live just a couple blocks away from my hometown team. And then,
I should have mentioned that. You're in Chicago.
Yes. And then last night we actually had, it was really awesome. We had a solid, like, 3-hour writing session for the new Lights Over Bridgeport record, which has kind of been a long labor of love process throughout this entire year. But we got locked into a room last night and did some more work on some of the songs. So
awesome. So when did your last album come out? Was that like 2 years ago?
Almost. It was February of February of 2017. So
right. Okay.
Coming up on 2 years. Yeah. Okay. It's crazy that it has been that long. It feels new to me still, but I think for us it's just a testament to how proud we are of that little EP. It did a lot of cool things for us. So
yeah. And so when you say, like, you locked yourselves in a room for 3 hours, and was Miko around?
No, Miko actually lives in Houston. He's from the Chicago area, like all of us, but he took a job in Texas about a year ago. Actually, it was like a year ago right at this time. And we've been kind of doing a lot of stuff over a computer. And him and I do a lot together because we both play guitar. So we do a lot of stuff together for the writing process as far as like arranging for a recording and like writing different guitar parts. But right now what we're primarily focused on is I have this big, big batch of songs that I've been working on basically since we put Good Grief out, I started writing immediately after we got back from recording that EP. And so I have this huge thing of songs, and we're going through it with my drummer. And, you know, he obviously has a huge input part when it comes to the drums and everything. So that's what we're doing now.
Do you ever bring a song to the guys and they're like, yeah, this sucks?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because there was one song that I was so big on, and I finished the song. Like, the way that I write songs, I tend to do it very piecemeal, and I'm kind of notorious for basically having about half of a release's worth of lyrics to write once we actually get to the studio. But I had this song that was actually finished front to back, and I thought the guys were really stoked on it. And I did an acoustic show at 350 Brewing, and I actually played the song and I got good feedback. But my drummer was like, man, I'm just really not feeling this one. Like, once we started putting the full band version together, and I'm like, oh. So we're still kind of working on it, but it definitely happens. Yeah. And, you know, I have to be open to that, right? I mean.
Yeah. Well, and then you have to do, like, do they bring songs to the group as well? Do any of them write music?
Not really. I mean, if they do, I don't know about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we finish our songs together, but it kind of always starts with ideas that I have.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they have a lot of input. You know, Kevin has a lot of a real foundational input. And then Miko and Kurt do a lot of, like, just kind of editing with, like, okay, take this out, this sounds good, that kind of thing. So
yeah. So when you write songs, like, what comes first? Do you wake up in the morning with, like, a melody in your head or something, or do you just have lyrics
sometimes
first?
Yeah, sometimes it just comes to me. I hear melodies in my head. The way that I have always approached writing songs is just coming up with a really catchy vocal melody or hook. Sometimes it'll be a guitar part, but usually it's more of like a vocal thing, like a cadence or a melody that I'm hearing in my head. Other times it'll be more of a deliberate thing where I'll sit down and want to be like, hey, I'm really feeling this kind of mood. I want to write something like this. And then I'll kind of use the guitar to like kind of force something out. But, you know, it's kind of a mix of those two things. I'm weird in that. At least whenever I tell people this, they find it unusual, but I'm weird in that, like, the lyrics are almost always the last thing that comes for me for songs. I'm way more focused on a song as far as its structure and melody and, like, the way it's arranged and the order of things than I am lyrics. Like, lyrics kind of come last. So, and that's kind of how I am as a music fan too. Which is also weird for people, like,
right.
Great lyrics I love, but they're almost like a bonus for me. Like, I listen to music for the melody and just kind of like to, you know, to kind of get into that piece of it. So
interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Can you think, is there a band that you can think of that you really like that, like, I don't know, like, you don't really care about their lyrics, but you just really love their sound?
One that comes right off the top is Coheed and Cambria. Like, they have a giant catalog of all these songs that are about these, like, space wars and, like, these fictional creatures, and, like, there's all these comic books. Like, I know nothing about, like, any of that stuff, but I've been a huge fan of that band for a long time, and I would say that his method of, or I don't know what his method is, but the way that he writes, like, not only, you know, songs in general, but specifically vocals and vocal melodies has been a huge influence on me. And I know my band as well, we're all big fans. Strung
is
out
too. Is that considered a metal band?
I think of them as just a rock band that kind of airs a little bit towards progressive rock.
Yeah.
People have, like, pretty strong opinions on them. Some people find them a little bit too nerdy, and or they can't deal with his very high vocal. But I just think of them as a rock band. I mean, if you listen to a lot of their songs, they always have, like, really catchy choruses and hooks. And that's, like, what I'm about. Like, my favorite band of all time is Jimmy Eat World. And they just write some of the best songs. And I think Coheed is very similar. Like, their choruses and... they just know how to hook you with a good hook and a good song. But they just also have all these extra noodly guitar parts and weird timing and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, because it's kind of how I feel about metal, because I have some friends that are really into metal or heavy stuff, and I'll go to shows with them and I love the music. Like, it just, like, it's so intense and it's technical. I love that aspect of it. But the lyrics about the fucking devil and about hell and about, I'm just like, dude, like, I don't know, I just don't vibe with that. So
that's another really good example of something that I love that I don't care about the lyrics is, I actually really love technical death metal.
Yeah.
And my favorite metal band's called Aborted, and they have all these songs about, like, this really gory stuff, and I am completely detached from it.
Yeah.
Like in the grind metal and death metal scene, like macabre lyrics is, it's just like kind of a part of the genre culture. So there's just all this, you know, grotesque like horror movie kind of lyrics, and I listen to it for the music. It makes me feel something, and that's why I love it. So.
Yeah, I do too. I love it. We need to find like a death metal band that sings about like love songs or something.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a thing. I think a band that tried to do that would be isolated from the community.
Why? It's interesting. Well, maybe not love songs, but maybe what else? Like, I don't know. There has to be something other than devil worship and gore and death and horror and all that shit. I don't know.
It's just for them, it's just a part of their culture, and that's just nobody wants to break the rank, you know. With punk, there's a little more freedom, I mean, to do kind of weird themes, and you know, you have bands like Masked Intruder, or like, you know, bands that dress up, or you know, it you know, gets a little bit more, I guess, less rigid is what I'm trying to say. But in the metal world, there's like a lot of rules,
right? Like there are bands that sing like Masked Intruder, like completely about love songs. And then there's other bands that never sing love songs. And then there's other, you know, some that sing about like political angst, and some that sing about social issues, or, and then all sorts of things. So like, yeah, that like the lyrics could really be about anything in punk rock.
Yeah. I mean, no rules. I mean,
yeah.
There's something for everyone.
Yeah. Where do you stand on this, kind of off topic? Maybe it's putting you on the spot, but like, I was just listening back to an old podcast where Jessica and I were talking about what had happened at the Warped Tour two summers ago with the Dickies and all that stuff. Like, how do you feel about the punk rock being too safe, or punk rock, like, that's not punk rock or whatever? How do you feel about that? Honestly.
That's a challenging question.
I know.
I mean, there's so much that someone could say to that. I mean, I think punk rock has to be inclusive, because I think it was a place that a lot of people wound up at because they didn't fit anywhere else. I don't really remember a lot of the details about that Dickies thing. I think it had something to do with the guy making some like real crass sort of like demeaning toward women remarks and that kind of thing. And if I remember correctly, the thing that kind of struck me about like pretty much every person that was like defending that dude and what he said kind of like was also like another older white male, you know, who like maybe for the first time was having to be challenged with considering like the plight of another, and decided to respond by just, you know, fuck this and fuck, you know, all this shit, punk's too safe. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, you know, I refer to our own music as like sad boy punk, because it's like all, like we have all these like sad songs about like getting your heart broken and all this. So I mean, like, nobody really cares about my opinion about like how tough punk rock should be, but I definitely think it should be inclusive, and I'm not really about like bashing anybody or being disrespectful toward anybody. I got into punk like in the mid 90s when I was like 11, 12, 13 years old. And I think things were a lot different than when I started going to shows, and maybe some more stuff like that maybe went unchallenged and didn't get noticed. And maybe that's what it was at that time, but that doesn't mean that it's not good to evolve and get a little bit better. I mean, I'm thinking too about the NoFX thing. Like, I'm not really like a huge, huge fan of that band, but when that happened, you know, a lot of people were just saying, yo, they've always been this way and they've said worse things. And like, I totally get that. But at the same time, like, I was kind of also thinking, like, can't we want to be a little bit better than making light of that, like right where it happened? Like, isn't it okay for us to just like want to be a little bit better? I don't know. I mean, you can't please everybody, you know? I mean, some things that the people get tore up about, is it the most personally offensive thing? Not so much, but I think high standards, you know, aren't the worst thing either. And punk rock can still adhere to that kind of a, you know, I guess, like of a moral code or whatever, but also still be challenging towards societal norms and whatever, you know.
So here to follow up on that, again, I'm putting you on the spot again, but so, you know,
I'm the last guy that should be asked these kinds of questions. Like, why? All I'm thinking about is the next pizza I'm going to eat, you know, like, hey, where do you stand on this? No, go ahead. I'm just teasing.
What do you think about tacos versus burritos?
Yes.
Well, I was just going to say, so I think with the onstage banter, right, like you could put your foot in your mouth really easily. And I've seen your show a few times. I've never heard you say anything even remotely offensive during onstage banter or anything. You know, I think you're really smart about what you say and that kind of thing. But a lot of your songs being very personal. And as a friend, I happen to know that some of the situations behind some of your songs, has anyone ever said to you, like, that song's about me, like, what the fuck? Or, I don't know. Have you ever taken heat for any of the songs that you've written that are really personal?
No, I've never taken any heat. Thank God. I mean, somebody's probably sitting around somewhere like, oh, is this dude, you know, still sad?
Other people have told me that, like, their ex-girlfriend came back and was like, do not ever sing that song again. Like, that's obviously about me and you can go fuck yourself.
I've had people give me some pretty incredible compliments. One that I'm thinking of recently was a friend of mine that I actually just kind of know through the gym. He came to see us at this real big festival show that we got a chance to play. And he had never really listened to our band before and wasn't familiar with our music. But I saw him two occasions after the fest, and he just made a point to tell me that when he watched our set, he had never heard the songs before and didn't know exactly what I was singing about, but that he could tell that they were very personal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that really made an impression on me. You know, and I have had people come to me and say, you know, that some of the songs that we've written have really touched them personally. You know, one example is our song Leaving in July that I wrote for my dad who passed away almost 10 years ago. I've had a few people come to me that have lost a father specifically and have told me that you know, that song meant a lot to them. That's amazing. I mean, I remember when I think I was 13 or 14 and I was listening to Milo Goes to College. And I heard Hope, like, for the first time, I was listening to it, and I couldn't believe, like, how personal it felt. I was actually sad at that time, too, and I couldn't believe how much I just, like, was just, I related to it so much, and I was already kind of dabbling into music and trying to write punk songs, but I had a really deliberate thought at that moment where I said to myself, this is what I want to do in my life. I want to try to create music and relate to people through music. Like that's what songwriting is for me. It's sacred and personal to me. And when I write about our personal stuff in our own songs, I'm not doing it with the intention of touching somebody. I mean, all of the Lights Over Bridgeport songs, all that stuff is real, man. It all happened to me. It's all personal stuff. That's just how I roll. But if I put that out there and it's 100% really me, there's no filler, there's no buffer. It's not like I'm not one of these people that like tells stories and uses allegories and weird sort of, you know, stuff like that. I just kind of straight at you. That's kind of what LOB is about. And if I do that and somebody then comes to me and says something to me about how much it means to them, I mean, if that's even one person, I'm the luckiest and happiest guy in the world to have that happen, because that's why I do it in the first place. It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's really nice. That's awesome. And I remember, so last summer, I got to see you at 350 Fest in Chicago.
Yeah.
Jessica and I went out there and we got to hang a little bit, which was really awesome. And we got to see you perform with Face to Face, which I know was huge for you.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, I mentioned Jimmy Eat World being my favorite band. Face to Face is my favorite punk band. So it's kind of like, you know, 1A. But I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I'd ever be playing a show with them. And what an incredible experience that was. We had a blast. It was awesome.
Who's your favorite member of Face to Face? Since this is the Face to Face podcast.
Yeah, that's... I almost wore my Face to Face shirt. You know, I'm like, I got to go full Mabel today.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Trevor has been a huge influence on what I do musically. And, you know, I have a very clear memory that I just told you about Descendants. I also have a clear memory about Face to Face. When I was 14, we went to the Warped Tour, and that was the first time that I saw them play. And I was just like, man, I was blown away. And another time I saw them at the Riviera in Chicago in high school, I remember I just was like looking on stage like, I want to be these guys.
Yeah.
This is the coolest thing. They're just the coolest band ever. And it was awesome to be able to play with them. Tremendous honor.
And that festival is so fun. Like, and Jessica and I have talked about 350 so many times, but like that festival is just so well run and fun and like organized. And I mean, it's like free beer and like carpet and a nice room and the hotel's attached. Like there's like everything you could ever want in a punk rock festival. It's like, it's perfect.
I always recommend 350 Fest to people. Like they really don't understand how great of an option it is. It's not just another fest. I mean, for the simple fact, one, that it's indoors, but even more than that, beyond the fact that it's indoors and it's clean and accessible, the people are just world class. When we got added to that fest, I thought that we were just going to be like, you know, the stinking openers, like, you know, kept at arm's length, you know, and we're just stoked to get the chance to play. But I started going to a few shows after we got added to the show, and there would be people who worked for 350 Brewing that would like approach me and they'd be like, oh, my husband works for 350. We saw you guys were playing the fest. Just wanted to introduce ourselves. Like if there's anything you guys need, like, just the most amazing people. Todd Randall is a god amongst men. He's just
I just was thinking about that. So 350 Brewing's been around for a long time, but how did they connect with punk rock? Like, is Todd just a fan of punk rock? Is that how they connected? Okay.
Yeah, Todd is all about punk rock and ska. And I don't know that they've been around forever. I'm pretty sure that they started 350 Fest just like a few years after they... I don't know the whole story. Partly because I'm not like a beer person at all, really. But
yeah,
I heard him. I was on another podcast with Todd, and he told the story, but I forgot. I know that 350 is from their address in college, so I remember that part.
Oh, okay,
that's where the 350 comes from.
Yeah, so. That's awesome. And then, so you've been to all the 350 fests? They've had four now.
They've had four. The first one, my friend Nick from the Swellers played. And we went and watched him play. And then the next one, my friend Frankie, who plays in Much the Same, he was working for 350 at the time. And he was like, hey, man, do you want to come help load band gear? And I'm like, he's like, I'm not going to pay you, but you get to hang out. And I'm like, of course, you know, and the Menzingers played that year. And I'm like, you know, they're one of my favorite bands, especially to see live. So that was funny because I wound up going to that one and actually working the barricade. Because they needed people to help.
Have you ever done that before? Have you ever worked the barricade?
No. No. And it was an unforgettable experience because all my life I've been the dude on the other side of the barricade.
Yeah.
And I go to this fest, and 350 Fest is huge. Like that year Bayside played and MXPX, there were just massive crowds. And all of a sudden, like I was the other guy, like behind the barricade, and everybody was just looking at me like I was this cop or something, like giving me the dirtiest looks. A couple people were just like yelling at me. And the thing was, is like, I didn't ask to do that. You know, I wasn't trying to be aggressive or anything. I was just trying to do the best job that I could. A bunch of kids were jumping the barricade and trying to run up on stage. And so they're like, we got to catch these guys. I'm like, I mean, I didn't go to like barricade guard school or anything. So I'm just trying to improvise. I wound up tearing some dude's shirt because he was trying to jump on stage with MXPX. And I don't know, it was a pretty crazy experience and gave me like a newfound kind of respect for people that have to do that.
Yeah. I've always thought that, like, what a shitty ass job. Like you're pulling people out that are sweaty and disgusting, and you get a shoe in the face or you get like Yeah, and you could just get stared daggers at the whole time. Like,
yeah. And I mean, for sure, there's probably people that work those jobs that are either jaded or just like tough guys and are like maybe a little bit too hard on the crowd. Yeah. But like, we were legitimately just trying to keep people safe. And at one point in the set, like, Mike from MXPX was like, I just want to just say a quick word to the guys down here working the barricade. He's like, try to go a little bit easier on these people. And I'm like, bro, I'm like, you got the wrong idea. We're not trying to, like, most of these people are brewery employees. Like, we're not trying to be rough with anybody. Right. And I don't know. I think their stage manager was worried about it, but it wound up being just a funny story.
Yeah.
And had a blast. And then the next year after that was the year that we played. And then 350 Fest 4 was just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
and I went to hang
that?
Out and Todd. It was awesome. Todd had me play a few acoustic songs. Jillian from Turnspit, who's been on Mabel before.
Yes.
She's a friend of all of ours. And she played a few songs in between bands. And then I came up and played a few songs in the VIP area. So we had a blast, man. It's like, I posted on my Facebook the next day. I was like, 350 Fest is like Christmas because like all your friends are there. There's all these incredible bands.
Yeah. Like, who was there this year again? Mest.
This year it was
Mest
Descendants.
Mest is kind of my like I don't really tell anyone except I'm telling everybody right now, but they're like my what do you call it? Like guilty pleasure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know them well, and that's double weird because they're from, like, right in my backyard, but...
Yeah.
At the time, they kind of, like, broke real big. I was not listening to a lot of pop punk or that kind of stuff. I was listening to a lot of metal and hardcore.
Yeah.
But they played, and they were awesome. Descendants were the headliner. Mm-hmm. Less Than Jake. Mm-hmm. Smoking Popes. A Wilhelm Scream, which is one of my favorite punk rock bands from your area. Mm-hmm.
Did you meet anyone in those bands?
Sincere Engineer and Burn Rebuild. I am not a big drinker, but I wound up drinking at 350 Fest.
What? And you did?
I did. And I was drunk and I had a good time. And I was just like hugging people. And I completely embarrassed myself. So I'm friends with Mike Flumley, the drummer of Smoking Popes, and before Descendants were going to play, we went over to the Smoking Popes merch table because I was going to say hi to Mike and we're going to watch Descendants together. And their table was right next to Wilhelm Scream. And I've never met these dudes. And I had plenty of beer in me. And I just gushed all of my love to Nuno and their two guitarists. Trevor's one of the names. And I'm just like, bro, thank you guys for writing the best music. Like, ever. You don't understand. And, like, I could just tell. Yeah, I was just having, like a total bro love fest with them. And they were very gracious. I bought a t-shirt.
Cool.
I don't know if I met anybody else that I can recall.
Yeah, but none of the Descendants?
No, you know, I mean, those guys are, like, I don't want to bother them, you know.
I know, right?
Yeah, I didn't really get close. I saw Stefan and... when we were watching Descendants play, I was really close to the side of the stage, and as Bill was playing, I kind of have this like man crush on Bill. I just love him so much. Yeah. And he just looked right at me and like looked right in my eyes and was just doing his amazing thing.
Yeah.
And it was like a star came down and touched me or something. I was like, wow, Uncle Bill, I just want to like give him a hug one day. That's like one of my life goals.
Yeah. That's so cool. So you just told me tonight, I didn't know this, that you and Mike and another dude are starting a new band.
Yeah. So excited.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
So excited. So my friend Travis Brown, he was in a band called Split Habit that was very successful in our area about 10 or 12 years ago. They like played the Warped Tour. They went on a few legs of the Warped Tour, and he's just this kind of guru of like all these different amazing things to do with media. And he's a super talented songwriter that I look up to. He has been a supporter of my band for a long time. And through that, he's helped my band, but we've also just become friends. And then I become friends with Mike just through, doing stuff around Chicago. So, I think it was Travis's idea, like, hey, you know, I've got these songs, let's jam on a couple of these mics down, like, why don't you come out? And I look up to both of these guys a lot and wasn't really thinking that, you know, I wasn't sure it was going to go anywhere. I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, oh, they're going to have me come play with them. But there was a really good musical chemistry from the get-go. And I had a couple songs that I had written because mm-hmm. Travis was like, oh, why don't you, you know, bring something to the table. I had a few, I've been writing a lot the past year or two, and I have a few songs that didn't quite fit into Lights Over Bridgeport. So long story short, we started jamming. There was an immediate kind of spark, and yeah. it's been a blast. The band's called Neat Freak, and we're working on 4 or 5 songs right now, and we're looking at recording and doing a video all here before the end of the year. So
that's awesome. So do you you play guitar, I assume?
Yes.
And sing?
Yes. Yeah, so I sing the songs that I write, and then Travis sings the songs that he writes, and then we do okay. some vocal stuff together.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And Mike is just one of the most hands-down incredible drummers. I'm not just saying that because he's a friend of mine. I mean, he's just an incredible, incredible drummer. So yeah. playing with him has been a blast too.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'm really excited for you about that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited too. I mean, you know, I love my band so much, but the way things are with us, like I can't, it's not something that we are able to do on a regular basis. So yeah. I'm excited to have something else I can do creatively, and I'm excited to see what happens. You know, right now we're just trying to have fun with it. We don't have like grand plans, but we're definitely going to record and play some shows and see what happens. I'm excited to unleash it to the world.
When that chemistry just comes together, like when it just works.
Yeah. And I mean, I definitely have that with my LOB guys too. I mean, I've been playing with Miko and Kevin for like 10 years, and we can kind of just, I always kind of say we could talk to each other without using words. Like we just kind of, it's pretty special.
Yeah. Well, you're pretty like, you're a nice guy. You're like, you're sensitive and kind. And like, I assume
sensitive, you know, rocker. I tell people that I'm a sensitive rocker, man.
Yeah. I'm a sensitive rocker. That's a good thing. But
I'll tell guys at the gym that
easy
they laugh.
To work in a group with, like, you know, like you're smart about how you give feedback because you've given Mabel some feedback, which has been awesome. But you're really smart about how you give feedback and about how you like challenge things or push things or put your ideas forward and that kind of thing. So you're like a good team player, I would say.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'm sure my bandmates would probably tell you some other things about me that
well, what would they say? Tell me what would they say?
Are not so flattering. Well, there's a meme that I send out. It's a meme of Bugs Bunny with a crown. Mm-hmm. And it says like me during load-in, like the guys always give me shit because they always like accuse me of never carrying gear.
Oh,
and okay. So like anytime as soon as we're done playing, they're like, oh, we know you have to go sign autographs now, or like they'll just give me shit about that. I don't know. I mean, you know, they make sure that I don't let anything go to my head about like how nice of a guy I am or whatever you're saying, you know.
Too. Yeah.
So I don't know what else they'd say. I mean, you have to have them on. I'm sure they'd say some other non-flattering things.
Yeah.
I'm thankful they put up with me.
Yeah. And you're also single, right?
Yeah.
We were gonna ask you to be on one of our punk rock love specials that we did.
Yeah, and I told you that was a bad idea because I'm 36 and I'm single and I obviously don't have the answers to love. So.
Well, and that was kind of the point is like, who does, number one, and like, I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to talk about, but so I'm just gonna do like a mini version of that. I just have a couple like easy questions, softballs, I promise. But like. Do you think it's hard as someone in a band to like?
We'll see about that.
I know, right? I mean, do you think you get a bad rap like right from the get-go with girls?
I don't know. I've definitely had it happen a few times where a woman would make a comment like very shortly after meeting me about what my love life must be like mm-hmm. because I'm in a band or like, you know. Oh, you know, just there's like sort of an assumption, but it doesn't happen every time. Yeah. you know, so I don't know.
Maybe
if
those
it
girls aren't familiar with the music industry.
Well, and they may not understand, like, you're just, like, you've just told the world, I'm just such a sensitive guy. I'm not this pig-headed, you know. No, I mean, like, I'm a man. I mean, I love women, and I've dated a lot the last few years. I don't really know that being in a band makes it harder or easier. I mean, it's just kind of who I am, you know. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I will say, I don't know if this is really what you're asking, but there have been a couple times that I've met women that I've been really interested in, and they don't know the first fucking thing about punk rock shows. And that doesn't really matter to me all that much. But, like, one gal I'm thinking of in particular, like, she had zero litmus for, like, what it was like to just be doing a show, you know, loading in, how it was going to take up my whole night, how people could potentially be, like, slamming into each other. Which doesn't happen too much in Sad Boy Punk, but it does happen sometimes, or for some of the other bands. And so that was a little bit weird, because I wanted to connect with her, but she was not going to have any idea, like, what it was about.
Yeah. And I always say, like, it's fine if someone doesn't know what punk rock's about, right? Like I just met somebody, like a friend recently, and they were like, oh, punk rock, is that, you know, like Pearl Jam, or, you know, people that don't know really much about it. And that's fine if they're open to it, but if they come with some preconceived notions about what it is, then that just gets annoying too,
for sure. I mean it just makes it harder.
It was funny, I was just reading on a friend's Facebook page, someone that's in a band, and he had 10 like 10 things you need to do if you want to date someone in a band. And it was like, never give them an ultimatum, like me or the band, because you're gonna lose. You know, don't ask to go to every single band practice. Don't ever go to band practice. Like, you're just not needed there. It was funny. It was like 10 really good things that you need to know if you're gonna date a musician in general, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few stories like that, but the few times that I've actually been in relationships, like, long term, like, the women were mostly pretty supportive of the music.
Well, that's a whole nother thing too, right? Like, so if you have a girlfriend, are they worried about you at shows?
I mean, there's been a few times that has kind of been a thing, mm-hmm. but not really in my experience.
I think it's
more so when I was younger
too. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're a very, like, earnest guy, and you're honest, and you know who you are, and I think that's what it's about. For me as a woman, like, women have a sense if our guy's cheating or not. Like, we just do. We just know.
Yeah.
And so, I wrote this on, like, Twitter one time out to the universe. No one even responded, but I was like, girls, if you think your guy's cheating on you, he probably is, like, because girls have a sixth sense about that, you know?
You guys have great sense about everything. I'm always wanting to ask you about, like, what shirt I should wear, or if I look stupid, like, wearing this or whatever. Or, like, I'm always asking, like, is this food going to spoil? Like, that kind of stuff I don't know anything about. I don't know. I mean, you could have a really good sense about that, but you could also just be paranoid.
Yeah. Yeah, there are for sure some people that maybe have had a bad experience, or they're super sensitive to that topic. But I do think, like, you know, on the opposite side, like, if your guy is honest and earnest, and he's where he says he's going to be, when he's going to be, and if he says he's going to call at 10, he calls at 10, or whatever it is, you know, you know that. So I think that's a lot of why you haven't been given shit in relationships, because you do what you say you're going to do, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
You don't just disappear for the night. Like, if you have a girlfriend, you're going to, like, call her when you say you're going to, or whatever.
Yeah, it's all about communication. I mean, you know, on the flip side, sometimes people just make up in their minds. And I mean, I've even done this in relationships where I make up in my mind, like, I make a decision about how something is for sure going to go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that might be negative. So, I mean, you know, every relationship's different. If somebody's just, like, determined that, yeah, no matter what you say or where you say you are, like, something's not right, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, if you just communicate to the person, I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Awesome. So do you want to give out your phone number? No, I'm just kidding.
I'll have to start get like a 1-800 number, see if I get any interesting calls.
Yeah. Paul was on our, I should do like an update. Paul was on our Punk Rock Love episode and he's now engaged.
And so
I would like to think we have a little something to do with that.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Man, who knows what the future is going to hold after this podcast? Or does it not count for me because it's not a love episode? Is this a love episode? I feel like there's plenty of love between us.
All I have to do is title it that, and then it is that. Punk Rock Love with Johnny Hamlin.
And other items, maybe.
Yeah, and a little bit of death metal thrown in.
Yeah.
And 350 Fest. Perfect. Well, thanks for shooting the shit with me. Do you want to plug anything? Anything like coming up or?
I appreciate anybody taking the time to look into Lights Over Bridgeport and checking us out on social media, YouTube. We've got a couple of music videos and we're working really, really hard on an album that we're going to release next year.
Your videos are really good, by the way. Who does those?
Thank you. There's two main ones. The newer one was done by a guy named Tim Motor out of Milwaukee, and the other was done by a guy named John Kapansky, who's done some work in LA, and now he's back in the Chicago area.
Okay.
So they're both amazing guys. But then also, my new band Neat Freak is going to be doing some stuff here around Chicago here toward the end of the year, beginning of 2019. So keep an eye out for that as well. Keep supporting Mabel Syndrome, and thank you for having me, Kristen.
Of course. Do you want to pick a song for the end?
Oh.
You got to pick an L.O.B. song.
Oh, should I pick an L.O.B. song?
I think so. I would like to.
I had one in mind, but for
you can pick two.
Okay. Well, the non L.O.B. song that I just kind of came back to last night when I got home from band practice was In Remission by the Menzingers. Just an absolutely incredible song.
Cool.
For Lights Over Bridgeport, I would be happy to share the song Heartbreakers with anybody interested to hear it.
Awesome. So Heartbreakers, is that a personal one?
They're all personal. Heartbreakers is a song that is kind of like I call it like a little love letter that I wrote to my band about just following our musical dreams, you know, so
really?
To speak. I mean,
oh, that's
yeah.
So cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that song is just about keeping at our passion, you know, no matter what. Yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Chris, and I had a blast.
Love you, man, Zach Day. chair.